Hey guys, welcome to another fabulous episode of In Your Head with yours truly, Chris Medina. I've got another special guest. I have been dying to have this woman on since I first met her, which was almost close to a year ago. Finally had the opportunity to record with her, get together, have a couple of drinks, have a couple of laughs, pick that beautiful brain of hers. Let me stop with the long-ass introductions and let me introduce you to one of the most fascinating, one of the most beautiful, one of the most funniest and just absolute warmest people I've ever had the pleasure of meeting. Let me welcome my good friend, Simone.
Hello, guys. It's War Baby from Murderous Miners Podcast.
Love, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm doing good. I have to say, 2019 is starting out pretty well. And I cannot complain thus far.
Good for you. So I want to talk about how we met real fast here, and then I want to jump right into everything. So I met you close to, was last October, right?
Right.
What was the name of that meetup? It was a murder podcast meetup, right?
Right. We had a true crime meetup, just a listener meetup for a couple different podcasts. So it was mine, Murderous Miners, and also Murderish, White Wine True Crime, and the Pros and Cons podcast. So yeah, we had a meetup in LA and that's where you and I met.
Yes. I met you through Carrie Martin.
Right.
I did her podcast, Pretty Scary, and was making my rounds at this little event that we were doing at. It was at this little cool little bar right there in North Hollywood, I think it was.
Yeah, Idle Hour.
There you go. Yeah. And so I'm doing my rounds, making my, you know, making myself be known, talking to this person, that person there. I look over to find out where Jay's at. I'm like, where's Jay at? And I see him snugged up in the corner talking to a blonde bombshell, and it was you. And I walk up, and Jay's like, oh my God, I met this lady here. I got to introduce you to her, blah, blah, blah. I sit down and immediately hit it off with you.
I smelled the Vietnamese on him. That's why. I can find my people anywhere. So immediately I said, oh, what kind of Asian are you?
My kind of people. Mine. Yeah. And so Jay introduced us and I loved you. Your energy, your presence, the way that you present yourself is very much what I'm into. And then I found out you had your own podcast, which was based on Kids That Kill, right?
Yes. Yes, well, I'm flattered, first of all. Thank you. And I think the same of you as well.
Oh, thank you.
Yes, my podcast is specifically about children aged 18 and under who committed the vile act of murder, which is so many more than you would ever think. But I really started getting interested in this topic. I would say it has to be 20 years ago, probably around when I started getting ready to have kids. Then I really began to notice what kids were capable of. I'd never really thought about kids before that because I was one.
Right.
But as soon as I started getting pregnant and having more and more kids, of which I have three now, I started to think about the types of things that children were capable of, because once you have kids, then your kids are going to be around other kids. So you always have to be careful.
So it kind of scared the shit out of you a little bit.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Scared the fuck out of me, actually.
Yeah, because we can control our kids. We can't control the behavior of somebody else's kid.
You can't. You can't control whether a kid has a vendetta against someone else, or even if they just have a curiosity to play with guns or other dangerous things. Fireworks. I mean, there's so many ways that kids could kill each other on accident.
Exactly. Because you have kids, we both have kids here, but why kids that murder, though?
When I started listening to podcasts and started to get an interest in specifically true crime podcasts, I noticed that I couldn't find a very steady source for these kinds of stories, so I thought, might as well start there.
That is a touchy subject, because a lot of people get turned off by that. It's just too dark of an energy to get yourself involved in. I know that we spoke briefly, well, not briefly, we've had, what, two drinks and like a couple hours of good conversation there. And I was telling you how I was brought up and a couple of family members that I was scared of growing up with.
Oh, it definitely happens to everyone. Everyone tells me that.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh my God. Yeah. So, and again, like you said, there's so many more than you realize. So touching on what you do and everything that you're involved in when it comes to that, have you had the opportunity yourself to interview a child killer?
You know, it's something that I've said that I was planning on doing ever since my very first episode. I've always talked about it and I've always mentioned it about writing to various killers, even some of the kids that I've covered who are incarcerated. they're able to receive mail. So recently, I would say right around the first of the year was the first time that I had an opportunity to actually reach out and make contact with somebody who has had the kinds of experiences that I write about. And there was a Mother Jones article about a certain incarcerated individual. He was a juvenile lifer. His name was Antonio Esprit. And he was incarcerated at the age of 17 for a crime he committed when he was 16. And he stayed incarcerated in the Michigan Department of Corrections for 30 years until he was 46 years old. Jesus. So he was just recently released in 2017 based on a Supreme Court ruling that determined that juvenile life without parole sentences were unconstitutional. So his case was reviewed, and the original prosecutor who put him behind bars also made the decision to release him with time served. So he thought that was pretty great, and I reached out to him after reading the article and seeing that he lived within 20 miles of me. And I can honestly say that we've become friends. I mean, we have breakfast, we meet for lunch, we text. I mean, we just, it's a really fun kind of inspirational relationship given what he's gone through and what he's been able to make of his life. Because even for 17 years, he devoted himself to taking classes and teaching other incarcerated juveniles and young people like himself that you can learn things, have an impact on other people, and make an impact in society, even if you are incarcerated. So he worked on that for almost 20 years before there was ever even a glimmer of hope that he would even come up for any kind of parole.
So what did he do to land himself in there?
Well, as a young teenager, he found himself in a difficult home life. So he grew up in a pretty nice community, and some of his neighbors, you know, he had several different families throughout his neighborhood in the suburbs who said, "We know you have issues with your mom and with your stepdad and with your home life, so if you ever need anything, come to us." So one of those families, they seem legitimate by day, but at night they actually traffic drugs and guns.
Oh, geez.
So he found himself spending more and more time with his family because he was able to get a hot meal there, you know, a hot shower, things that he needed that he wasn't getting at home. And he just slowly found himself enveloped into this life. And so he was involved in a gang drug-related shootout where the gun that he was firing killed an innocent bystander.
Oh, geez.
Yeah. So during the time that he was incarcerated and when he came up for resentencing, they did reach out to, you know, the mother of the victim, she always forgave him. She always understood his circumstances and understood how he found himself in the position that he was in the day that her son died. He also had a very young daughter at that time. So by the time that Antonio came up for parole, she was grown and angry and bitter, you know, and she had thoughts about things that had happened. So throughout the mediation process, as he began to approach his resentencing, he was able to speak to her, and they have actually, they forged a relationship of mutual respect. And she began to just understand him as a grown adult person, separate from the person who, you know, was a young teenager who killed her dad, you know. So he's not the first person that I've known who's taken another person's life, whether it be self-defense, inadvertently or on purpose, but it's just interesting to see life through his eyes, because it's very innocent.
This was not like a premeditated type of murder.
No.
This was just, I mean,
it was the wrong place, wrong time kind of situation.
You ever interviewed or met a child killer that was, where the murder was premeditated, that the child set out to do this? What are your thoughts on those types of situations?
Well, I mean, I shouldn't say that. Of course, I would be willing to speak to anyone who wanted to speak to me. But I wouldn't probably initiate that kind of conversation with anyone who wasn't incarcerated for life. You know, just because I don't want to scare my family. You know what I mean? My family also has to think about the fact that a bunch of killers know who I am and, you know,
yeah,
where I live, what I look like, and that kind of thing. So I'm pretty careful when it comes to that, but working in, I plan to do a lot more work in local institutions where I can actually reach juveniles. And Antonio does a ton of different volunteer work with a lot of different organizations throughout the whole state, headed up by lawyers, by the Department of Corrections or by state representatives or congresspeople, all kinds of people. So I'll know I'll have the opportunity to meet these kids. And maybe to me, I look at it differently because, you know, there's that whole thing with people are born evil or people aren't born evil.
Yeah.
And I just feel like, okay, first of all, I feel like people are born evil.
100%.
Yes. I don't generally tend to go towards stories that I feel don't have some kind of root cause in a person's life. You know, I like to look at what happened in a person's childhood or how they were raised or what happened with their family dynamics or what put them in the kind of situation mm-hmm. that they're then going to think that killing or taking someone else's life is going to make them feel better.
Right.
I don't purposely go after stories where I feel like the kid is evil. You know, I don't feel like there's as much to go on there because that's more opinion. But
do you firmly believe that, though, that children definitely. Are born? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I try to stay away from those people. That's not the kind of energy I want.
Does that scare you more than somebody that kind of becomes a product of their environment and then goes out and does something like that? Because that's the lifestyle that they were. I mean, again, we wouldn't go so far as to say they were born evil, but they were in certain situations or brought up to basically survive, right?
And choose to go that way.
Right.
I mean, I would be more weary of speaking to somebody like that one-on-one, mainly because I don't like that kind of energy in my life. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? I like the energy of more that's toward healing and toward making something better of yourself, not blaming or trying to pin the reasons why things happen. You know, I think more like when I can't even pinpoint anything where I can say somebody specifically was born evil. But when you read someone's story or you research someone's story, you get a feeling for whether that person takes responsibility for their actions or if they're trying to blame it on a matter of circumstance. I like to dwell more in these are the choices I made and maybe now I feel bad about it or maybe now I don't, you know?
Yeah.
But whether you do or not, I want to hear about how you feel about it, you know?
I do not want to get involved with somebody that is evil right. or that has that type
it's
of energy.
It's best to just keep it out of your sphere of consciousness so it doesn't leak in.
Because, again, I wouldn't go so far as to say that I'm very susceptible to things latching onto me, but my own psyche and my own way that I think and when I delve into it goes too far. Like, I'll give you a quick example. This is a little off, but I was working one of these events, and this older woman that walked in, and she was, like, had to have been, like, in her late 70s, I mean, even 80s. She was very, very old, and she was frail, and I was walking to the bathroom in between my break from reading people, and this woman that was hosting the event walked up, and she's like, oh, Chris, you're a psychic medium, right? And I was like, yeah. She goes, this woman has said that she has an attachment on her, and I was hoping that you can kind of get it off of her or read her and see what's going on. And I looked at her and I said, oh, I'm sorry, I can't. And the host looked at me like, fucking bitch, like, what do you mean you can't? And I was like,
perform for me right yeah. now.
And so I looked at the lady and I told the host, I was like, this woman doesn't have an attachment to her. She's got a psychological issue. There's something psychologically wrong with her. She's having the early stages of dementia. There is no attachment there. She's just, for lack of a better word, and I'm trying to put this as sensitive as I can, she's losing it.
Yeah.
And so she was like, oh, wow, or whatever. The older woman was looking at me, and I was reading her because I couldn't help it. My guide said, look at her one more time. And I looked at her, and when I was looking at her, the woman goes, why is he staring at me? What's wrong with him? Why is he looking at me like that? Oh, is he going to do something to me? And I said, there you go.
Yeah.
I told the lady. So I went to the bathroom, went to go do what I have to do, came back to my booth, and I look, and I'm like, where's my guides are like, find the older lady. Look what's going on. So I'm scanning the room, and I see this older lady sitting in the corner with a bunch of healers, supposed psychics, mediums, and they're doing all this crystal work on her. And they're like, we're going to get the negative energy off you. And I was like,
they were working her over.
Working her over, taking her money.
Right.
When it comes to that sort of thing, because I've had people ask me, like David Omen, who owns the Omen House right there. Are you familiar with that?
Mm-hmm.
It's the house that's three doors down from where Sharon Tate was murdered.
Oh, okay.
So right there on Cielo Drive or whatever.
Okay, yeah.
I've had the opportunity to go raid his house. Don't pick up anything shady off of there. I know that the Ghost Adventures had done a show there or whatever. I walked up to where the murder was at Sharon Tate's house. And I got sick from there. There was just something, there was bad juju with there and with that area there. And I walked back and I was like, I can't do this anymore. But I went to David's house, didn't feel that type of energy there. Nothing shady or ominous, just very, there was a lot of energy in there, but it wasn't shady. And I was worried about going in there because I didn't want to bring the energy back with me. So very much like with you, going and reading or having an interview with somebody that is a born evil, that's still living, has to really do a number on somebody like you, because this is something that you're actually talking face to face with. And I've talked to you about this before too. You can look in somebody's eyes and see that disconnect there. As I got older and I had kids of my own, when they started going to school, I was very much telling them, the minute you hear a shot, get down. Don't try to run. Like, that's one of the things that scared the living shit out of me.
What you were also saying earlier, I feel like a lot of these disconnects that make kids just do anything, it's like lack of love, maybe?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure, like, how other people define love, but I mean, love by just interest in what you're doing on a daily basis. Showing someone that you care. I know plenty of kids who may or may not even be sure their parents care about them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Which is not any way to grow up. Which is not any way to live your life at all, not being sure if people care about you or not.
Well, we were just talking about how we raised our kids. And you said something, but I'm going to save that for another show because I really got to go in on that one. But I was talking about like how I raised my kids, and I was very hands-on with them. My kids definitely knew that I love them, or they know that I love them.
Right. Even last week, we were trying to make plans for my youngest daughter's birthday, and one of her friend's parents, like, she woke up and they just weren't home. So we were trying to go to the movies and go out to eat, but she couldn't get a hold of her parents. And I was just like,
what the hell?
How do you just not be there when your kid wakes up from, you know, on a Saturday or on a Sunday, you're just not there? Like, I understand you're out working, but uh-huh. You still need to at least be around for your kids.
Girl, do you know that I had my kids call me when they walked from the front door of the house to the bus stop, which was just down the block and around the corner? Stay on the phone with me till you get there and you get on the bus.
My kids have never taken a bus, so I feel you.
Yeah, I was like that.
So,
how are you with babies? Because we were talking about our energy and you being very perceptive and very intuitive in your own right. Are you close to babies? How do you resonate with babies?
Babies like me.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. Like I literally will just stare right at me. I have a very good connection. I'm waiting on a baby right now. Jackie, hurry up with baby Mason. He was due on the 17th. I'm really looking. I was hoping he'd be a Pisces, but he did not make it.
He's already starting off as an Aries. He's already.
Oh, isn't he though? Oh my gosh. Oh, he's giving her a run for her money, but I'm really looking forward to meeting this one, and we'll take another Aries. I'm not going to send him back.
Yeah, true. Yeah, babies and I go hand in hand. I love babies. Babies love me. They're very attracted to my energy. And anytime there's a baby around,
it's because we're calm underneath.
And I'm not just saying this, though, but we're actually really good people. Our souls are really good, and babies are very innocent, and they're very intuitive. They're very, they're born psychic. They're born with all their abilities. It's how they're raised that jades the shit out of them.
Mm-hmm.
So when
nature
they're little,
versus nurture.
Yeah.
Sure.
So when they're little, like my good friend Allie has a daughter who's going to turn one actually in a couple of days.
I heard you talk about this baby before. You guys are like, right?
Oh my God, my third eye was throbbing and she knew it, and she put her forehead right up to mine and she started laughing. I was like, that's how connected I am to babies. So when I just want to go back here when we talk about kids that are born evil. I was around a child that I said was born evil. There was just a disconnect there. The eyes were dark black. The soul was of bad intention. The energy there was just...
Right. She has the opportunity to go that way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very much so. If you have the opportunity to interview that person face-to-face that was actually born evil and you could see that disconnect, how do you think you would do with that?
Oh, I would do it, absolutely. And if the opportunity arises, then I would definitely take it. Because I want to know. There's something very interesting about speaking to somebody who's taken someone else's life, whether it be accidental or intentional. No matter what age they were, you just get a different insight into the human condition when you speak to somebody who's done that, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a whole different outlook on life that you'll never have. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm willing to experience that from any opportunity that I can, but I won't seek that one out.
Let's talk a little bit about your background, if you don't mind. Like, growing up, like, were you always fascinated with true crime or, like, the occult or spirituality?
It's probably not something that I really remember before I was a teenager.
Uh-huh.
But I remember as a teenager watching 2020 and watching Dateline, like, seriously. And I've always continued to since then. Uh-huh. So it's something that's kind of grown. And not only that, but although I live in the Phoenix area now, I grew up here around the time of the Night Stalker.
You read my mind. I was going to ask
the original Night Stalker. I lived here for the original Golden State Killer when he was not the Golden State Killer, but I lived here during both of those times. So murder has always, I mean, if you grew up anywhere around LA, murder is just something that's not even that weird to you.
Richard Ramirez scared the living shit
out of me. Oh yeah, we were at the prime age to be scared of that.
We were like 9 years old.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I remember, because he was, I remember looking at the news, my grandmother, I lived with my great grandmother at that time in North Hollywood in this tiny little apartment there, and she would always watch the news before she went to bed, and I would always listen to it. As scared as I was, the news always represented scariness to me. And I remember,
when we were little, there was 50% of what we watched on TV was the news. Yeah. There was not very much cable, and no one had all this access to all these channels. Like, everyone was just watching the news.
I didn't get a goddamn VCR until I was like a teenager.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
But what stood out to me was that that fucker murdered elderly women and raped them. And my grandmother was old, and I would... You should not have to. I had a good friend, Ryan Bailey, on the last episode there, and he was talking about being afraid of nuclear war and all this shit. I was afraid of murders. I would go around and lock the windows. And the minute that the window wasn't locked, because my grandmother would say, oh, I locked all the windows, I would say, this fucking one was open. You know, you got it. This guy sneaks in.
Be diligent,
yes,
Grandma.
God damn it. And my mouth, I'm telling you right now, nobody believes it. My mouth is very much the same as it is now as it was back then. So I was very much like, fuck, you know, blah, blah, blah. But yeah, he scared me.
Yeah, and he scared me too. And then the older we got, the scarier looking he got. And then his teeth got like pointy, and he just got scarier and scarier and scarier. So
and he,
that's what I grew up with.
He laughed in court. He was not
afraid.
He was
frightening.
Yeah, he was. Would you interview somebody like that? Or is that just too much for you?
I mean, I would if they were incarcerated.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know who I could interview who was just free roaming around, free to know where my children live. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But anyone incarcerated, yeah, I don't have a problem with.
What do you think? I've been dying to ask you this. I know this is a little bit out of the realm of children here, but since you're all about true crime here, what about the Ken and Barbie killer? Carla Homolka.
And the... Bernardo or whatever?
Paul Bernardo,
yeah.
Yes.
The Canadian?
The Canadian ones, yeah. What do you think about, do you know that case?
Yeah, well, see, here's what I think. So they're the ones who, he raped her sister and killed her, right?
And killed three other teenagers.
Right, okay. Here's what I think about that. This bitch falls in line with the same bitches who let fucking their boyfriends kill their baby. Like, it's the same thing. It's just that same man worship. So it's some kind of father complex.
But she was there when he raped her.
Right, but she let him do it. Mm-hmm. You know, so I just feel like, well, she did it because, she let him do it because, not because she was scared of him. I really don't
believe
that.
I don't believe that,
that
shit
it's
either.
It's because she loved him so much.
Uh-huh.
And it's a whole, I don't want to put it all the way out there on the father-daughter thing, but, you know, that's what I think it is. So many of these horrible crimes against innocent young children take place by people who shouldn't even be in their lives. You know
exactly.
What I mean?
Yeah. Going back to Carla Homolka real fast here, she was part of the crimes. Yeah. She was there when he was raping these women. There's also a video of her. Mm-hmm. And she was probably the first one that made the deal with the devil there, and now she's out and free.
She is.
She really got away with murder. She played her last final card with those tapes. I'll show you where the tapes are if you'll give me X, Y, and Z. And they did it without even reviewing that stuff. And that's why she's out free.
Right, and so then come to find out, once they look at it, they're like, oh my gosh!
And they're looking at her like, you
it's
fucking
too late.
Bit. It's too late. Mm-hmm. It is too late.
She manipulated them. But a lot of the stories that I do, you know how I feel about my parents? They were fantastic. But we grew up in a time where parents were very involved with themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the stories that I cover come out of the 90s, or come out of the early 2000s, times that I'm familiar with, you know, that... Things around the country were changing, things around the world were changing, and sometimes the raising of kids gets pushed to the side because everything else is a lot more pressing.
You had said that we are the reasons why millennials are millennials, and I was like, God damn, like, because I always talk shit about millennials. I'm always saying, like, again, they're so emotionally disconnected. They do not know how to deal with emotion because everything is very much handed to them. Like, here is an iPad. Go distract yourself with it. But the way that I raised my kids, and again, I can say until the cows come home how I raised mine, but I was very hands-on. I very much wanted them to use their imaginations. Just think about when we grew up.
Yeah, we played everything possible because we had nothing else to do.
Right, like you made games. Like I remember we played this game
called... String, you know, you hung string from here and there, and then you put the Star Wars character's hand on it, and then it slid the whole way.
My G.I. Joes, exactly. Too. Yeah, so we had very much our imagination, but like these kids now are growing up, and they're not able to handle emotions the way that we did because we were forced to. Does that make sense? Because we had
all parents. We had was emotion.
Yeah, exactly. That's why we need our vape pens.
Exactly.
But so moving forward here, moving into the, I guess into the present now. What do you hope to do with the podcast?
I really had no other hopes other than entertainment. I mean, when I started thinking about this, I was just so very entertained by podcasts. And then I was very entertained by true crime podcasts specifically, mainly because there's so many facets to true crime, because you have things like law, like how the law works. Like in every one of my episodes, what I mostly go over is what happens to you once you're arrested, what you get charged with, I only usually do stories that are complete. I want everyone to know what happened in the long run. Like, where are they right now? You know, their case has been resolved.
Right. I was talking to Jay about Eileen Wuornos. I just wish that I could have been a friend. I know that sounds so crazy to have been a friend to her while she was growing up, because that woman, as much as she was a little bit out there, if she was guided in the right direction, because she was not afraid to put herself out there. Like when she went on those interviews, I'm sure the movie hyped her up a little bit more, but going on those interviews and somebody had actually given her a real shot and gave her an opportunity, I don't think she'd be in the place that she, you know.
Well, and that's, I totally agree. Like she's like representative of a person who just reached their limit and said, fuck it.
Yep.
Like, I'm fucking sick of all y'all shit.
But that's because nobody gave that woman a fucking opportunity.
Right. She just got tired of getting shit on all the time. Yeah. You know what I mean?
This is not like a Richard Ramirez type of thing.
Right. Or it's not like Ted Bundy either, where he just doesn't feel like he didn't get something he deserved. You know what I mean?
Right. Right. She was raped. She was beaten, even by law enforcement, too. Like you said, she just was like, you know what, fuck this. Somebody like her is damaged goods, and I've been around damaged goods my whole life.
You can actually see when the disconnect probably could have occurred.
Exactly.
You know, in certain people, it's like, well, when this happened, that was it. She didn't give a shit anymore, you know?
That's why I very much talk about you can either choose to become a product of your environment or you can do something about it. But yeah, I, in a perfect world, to be able to catch that ahead of time or to help. I mean, I love kids. I love the
innocence of kids. It's just, I love it so much.
And they're so, you can just see the hope in their eyes. So whenever I hear like a child being murdered or like a child go bad, I'm like, what the fuck were the parents at? Where was the guidance at here? You know, or like, it really bothers me when a parent kills their own child. Can you imagine what, like, I'm gonna tear up, but like, can you imagine what that child's last thought is, this is my daddy or my mom killing me? No fucking way. It's just, ugh. Have you seen Abducted in Plain Sight?
Oh my god.
Do you know I was screaming at that fucking television the whole time?
So I just went ahead and jacked him off. Like, what?
But I knew when they when they showed the father, I had told Jay, I said, oh, he's gay. And Jay was like, what? And I was like, oh, he's gay. You pimped out your daughter for your own selfish fucking needs.
Both of you.
Both of them. Both of them.
And this is how we made millennials. You understand what I'm always telling you now?
Yes, 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 yes.
Those parents were doing in the 70s. Welfare of their actual children, only just involved in their own lives. Oh yeah, we'll let this fucking strange guy from church come in and build a partition in our kid's bedroom. Get the fuck out of my girl's bedroom. Why are you even downstairs? Why are you in my house?
Exactly.
We know you from church.
Uh-huh.
Stay at church.
Yeah, and you want to take my daughter
now.
Take my daughter on rides?
Okay, but ignore your own five children.
You know what scared me growing up, too, was one of the biggest horror stories for kids. Remember Adam? John Walsh's?
Walsh.
Oh, my God.
Oh, and his poor little headless body floating down the canal in Florida.
Every goddamn parent.
I remember the Daniel J. Travante movie that we watched on the, you know, the Monday night movie on TV. Yeah. And we're screaming, Adam!
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I remember.
That was every parent's...
Abduction, yeah.
Every parent's thing at you. Remember what happened to that kid, Adam? And I would be petrified. Stop saying that. Stop saying that. But yeah.
Yeah, it's true. It's true.
You are a sun in Pisces, moon in Cancer.
Yes.
I am a Taurus, moon in Pisces. And I was telling you, girl, you probably do horrible in very public places because you pick up on all the energy.
Awful.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I can probably go 30 minutes to 1 hour, like in a grocery store. Like at a concert or something, you know, it's a little bit easier. But in situations where I have to do something and everyone is doing something, it's very frenzied and I get overwhelmed pretty quickly and I just gotta go. But once I go, I'm fine.
What about the movie theater?
The movie theater's fine as long as I'm in and out. Like, I don't come early. I don't spend a lot of extra time there. And our movie theaters are nice now because they're very secluded. You don't even really see anyone around you. So I do a lot better in that kind of situation. Where everyone's just sitting next to each other, next to each other, next to each other. It's a little bit harder to concentrate.
Yeah, I just cannot stand the sound of other people and the energy there. Jay and I went to go see Captain Marvel on opening weekend. Big fucking mistake. Right? And I was like, it's a Sunday, it's 7 o'clock at night, nobody's going to be here. This coming from a psychic, right? We get in there and there's coughing, there's people rattling shit and the thing. I'm like, get me the fuck out of here. And I'm not even smoking weed right now, too.
Right.
Yeah.
That's the issue, too.
Yeah.
Is that you didn't pop an edible before. But
you and those goddamn edibles.
Edibles come in handy in situations like movie theaters or when you have to go to the mall or be in an airport.
Oh, man. I can do okay in an airport. Jay is the one that can't do it. He's a fucking nightmare to travel with. But real fast, touching on edibles real quick here. I told you I can't do them.
Yeah.
They make you okay?
Yeah. Yeah. For the most part, if I'm, you know, I got to be pretty careful. I got to dose well. I don't try to get crazy or anything. But if I do it when at a very specific time when I need to, like, I couldn't just wake up every day and do it.
Mm-hmm.
Because I have to be careful with things that mess with my sleep. Because I'm a very poor sleeper.
Same here.
It's terrible.
What time do you go to bed?
On a good day, 1:30 or 2.
Girl, same
on
here.
On a bad day, 4.
How long do you sleep?
6 hours. On a good day, on a bad day, 12. Nothing fucking in between. Like, I only sleep a few hours or I sleep forever. Like, I'm not good at just doing 8 hours every day because I don't need 8 hours every day. Some days I need 4 and some days I need 10.
I am envious that you could sleep 12 hours.
Once every 3 weeks, maybe, but I have to have a lot of nights of bad sleep to get a good night of sleep is what I'm saying. Like, I have to, like, build it up.
Yeah.
It's weird. I'm envious of my husband who can, like, just lay down and then he's just snoring. And then he just wakes up when his alarm goes off. Like, I'm not like that.
Neither am I.
Ever.
Neither am I.
It's a torturous life.
It is. I sleep anywhere from maybe 3 to 4 hours a night, and that's about it.
Yeah.
And then I have to get up, because if I lay in bed, I'll get irritated. I have to get up and start doing stuff.
Well, all your spirit guides are poking you. That's why.
Exactly. Yeah, and my mind just never shuts off. Do you fall asleep with the TV on? Do you watch crime shows before you go to bed? Because people think it's morbid for me because I watch Forensic Files or Unsolved Mysteries before I go to bed.
Well, I used to, but as a courtesy to my spouse, who gets up way, way earlier than I do, I've turned to either, watching it on my phone or I'll just listen to podcasts. Like, okay. I can listen to podcasts and go to sleep, you know. But yeah, definitely, all the time. I don't have to turn that stuff off and things don't generally scare me.
Yeah. I, even living, like when Jay and I were living in Oregon and we had that 4-bedroom house, I very rarely slept in my bedroom. I was always on the couch watching TV, and that's where I was most comfortable.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know about you, but that's where, again, I go to bed, everybody's gone, everyone's asleep, and I could sit down there till 3 or 4 in the morning till I got myself tired and then went off to bed.
Well, yeah. I don't like to spend too much time in my actual bed because then I'll get too comfortable in it. I had a couple years earlier, maybe after my first husband died, where I spent maybe a little bit too much time in my room and a little bit too much time in bed.
Uh-huh.
So I've made it like a personal, I've made a quite a bit of an effort to reverse that. Because once, like, I was putting up blackout curtains in my whole house.
See?
Like, I love it so much, but I've had to turn from the dark side. It's not good for your mental health.
Yeah. But, you know, we you go through that, though. You know what I'm saying? Like for me, I went through that phaser, but I also had my friend Vicodin helping me.
Yeah, how was that?
Girl, it worked for the first couple months. And then I got angry.
Shit your guts out.
I lost so
passed
much.
Passed out in a sweaty heap.
I went to work. I went through a little mental health break from work, and I took about 2-3 weeks off. And when I finally got up to go back to work, mind you, I'm popping Vicodin still, I almost killed somebody at work. Like, the sound of the coffee machine, the phone ringing, I literally, my fingernails were in the desk. I was like, shut the fuck up, shut up, shut up. Yeah. I love you, and I want to thank you so much for coming on. It has been an absolute honor and pleasure having you on my podcast, sitting across from you. I've been dying to do this for so fucking long. You have no idea. So can you tell the audience where they can find you? I want them to know all about your podcast. I want them to know all about your social media handles and everything that's going on with Simone Warbaby.
Okay, well, you can find us on Twitter. I'm at Warbaby with 3 Ys, or at Killer Kids Pod. I'm also at Killer Kids Pod on Instagram, or you can find me on Facebook at Murderous Minors Podcast. I have a page and a group, which I should be a lot more active in, but given my subject matter is, you know, there's not a bunch of funny memes, there's not a bunch of, you know, there's not a bunch of things I could really, I really just post things that have to do with my subject matter, which isn't always the greatest, and, you know, we do teary emojis and things like that, but we have a community there, and I'm on Snapchat too at Killer Kids Pod. I'm all over the place, and I love talking to my listeners, and I love getting suggestions for stories. People, you know, all kinds of listeners reach out to me all the time just to talk about whatever, and I honestly, I love it, and it makes me feel so honored that anyone is even listening to me.
Same here, girl. For those In Your Head podcast people out there, please do yourself a favor. Check out my girl, Simone Warbaby. Check out Killer Kids Pod.
Murderous Minors.
Murderous Minors. And do yourself a favor. Get to know her. She is an incredible woman. She's fascinating beyond belief. This is Chris Medina for In Your Head podcast with the beautiful, the mysterious Simone, a.k.a. Warbaby, saying we are out.
Have a good night, everybody. Thanks for listening.